The presenting sponsor of Food Safety Matters is Arm & Hammer Animal and Food Production and their own hashtag science-hearted podcast, Food Chain Chats. In a recent episode, Dr. Christine Alvarado discussed ways food safety managers can avoid information overload when facing the deluge of food safety data out there. Specifically, she shared strategies for keeping it simple, targeting objectives, and getting the actionable insights you need most when you need them. Listen and subscribe to Food Chain Chats wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Food Safety Matters, the podcast for food safety professionals. I'm Stacey Acheson, publisher of Food Safety Magazine, and I'm here with my co-host and editorial director of the magazine, Barbara Van Renterham.
And farmer.
And farmer, yes. In the MBC.
Massachusetts Bay Colony.
There
my
you go.
Seed potatoes came today.
Yes, big day. Oh, big day. All right, and for today's interview, we're going to hear Barbara's discussion with Omar Yarzabal, an Extension Associate Professor and Food Safety Specialist at the University of Vermont. Omar offers instruction on everything from HACCP to biostatistics to microbial risk assessment. But many readers of Food Safety Magazine, as well as our eDigest, know him as the man who conducted surveys to assess how food safety professionals define the term food safety. The results are very interesting, which is why we felt it would be worthwhile to continue the discussion with Omar on the podcast. So be sure and stay tuned for that featured, because it's the main event, the featured interview. We have so much content, we have to have like subheads for everything. There's a lot going on in this episode. So buckle up, Buttercup. Here we go. We're also going to be checking in with Gary Ades, president of GNL Consulting and chairperson of the Food Safety Summit's Educational Advisory Board, to get updates and insights regarding this year's conference, which is coming safely to a screen near you May 11th. Through the 13th. But first, coffee. Oh, no. I mean, first, the news. I wouldn't mind some more coffee, though, but nobody's bringing it to me.
Or me.
I can ask. So. Yeah. Adam, what are you doing over there? You could be, you know.
Starbucks delivers now. So, you know, what's the deal here?
All right. Our first story comes out of the University of Cincinnati, where they've conducted a study on safe levels of allergens. So the current allergen labeling offers little to no guidance regarding the presence of allergens other than, you know, may contain or, quote, was processed in a facility. So new studies are being conducted to determine safe levels to improve labeling. So the University of Cincinnati study was supported by the Institute for the Advancement of Nutrition Studies and was the first of its kind based on tests of U.S. patients to estimate the doses of tolerable amounts of peanut protein. So it got a little deep for me on these, like, acronyms and doses and stuff. So, Barbara, I'm just going to let you say what happened next.
There were a lot of statistics, too, in this one. Which I don't particularly like statistics, but in a nutshell, so this group did challenge studies, which is when you introduce low doses of the allergen to a population. So they were able to come up with doses. So then I go back to my pharmacology. So they came up with values for doses in which either 1% of the individuals or 5% of the individuals had a response to that allergen. Mm. So those are called ED01 for the 1% or ED05 for the 5%. So once they got those values, then they were able to come up with what a suitable dose would be to determine this safe level. So at the end of the day, when you have values like that, then you can improve the food labeling guidelines with respect to food allergens. Now, what they don't talk about and what our friends at the University of Nebraska always say is that you have to know your own threshold for the allergen. So while this is a great step forward and we do need some values that might apply to most individuals, and that's why they do studies like this, you really have to tailor that for yourself and work with your physician if you happen to have a food allergy.
Yeah. So they would probably then, if they ever did get to the point where they're able to say this kind of stuff, they would also have the disclaimer, but please consult your physician for...
I think most folks with food allergy do that anyway, but...
Yeah, if it's serious enough, right? Yeah. All right. So today is apparently study day because the next up is FDA has released the results of their 2019... And I said to Barbara, 2019, should we be talking about this? She assured me, no, this is still viable. It takes a minute to get the results tabulated. And this is a study that a lot of people do rely on for this information. So I digress. The 2019 Food Safety and Nutritional Survey Report that assesses consumers' awareness, knowledge, understanding, and self-reported behaviors relating to food safety and nutrition-related topics. We, of course, are most interested in the food safety results. So we'll walk it through here. First, consumers believe that people are more likely to contract a foodborne illness from food prepared at a restaurant versus food prepared at home.
Bzzz.
Not much of a surprise there. you don't concur? Well, it's what people believe, so can
they
you...
can believe that. I'm not sure I believe it, but
well, once we get through all of this, you know, I'm going to call foul on a few things here too.
Well, no, you know what happens? What happens is you only hear about it when it affects a lot of individuals.
Yeah.
And then...
What are you going to do, sue your mom?
Well, you might never connect the dots that it was something you did in food preparation that made you sick, or you ate that, you know, that lettuce that's been sitting in the crisper drawer for 4 months.
Well, that also brings me to another, because here's where privilege does come into this too, right? Those of us who are, you know, lucky enough to be able to go, well, that doesn't look right, you know.
Sure.
And those who are food insecure who go, I think I can still make that work.
Right.
So, next, consumers are more concerned about raw chicken and raw beef than raw vegetables or fruits being contaminated. And the numbers here, you know, 93% for chicken, 66% for beef versus 9% for vegetables and 6% for fruits. Kind of, it's interesting when you consider also that against the backdrop of
romaine lettuce.
Romaine. I mean, yeah. So some messages have gotten through,
right,
though, right? All right. Next up, consumer awareness of pathogens varies greatly. Now, I'm going to go ahead and digress here because they said germs. To which I went, germs? What? Germs? What are they, cooties? You know, no, pathogens. So consumer awareness of pathogens varies greatly. Awareness of Salmonella and E. coli were very high, but Campylobacter and Vibrio were very low. So Salmonella, 97, E. coli, 88%, but Campylobacter and was just 7%. Vibrio, a mere 4%.
I think it's what's in the news, right? What do you hear about the most?
Well, I mean, even we don't hear about Vibrio that much.
Right.
I think I kind of, yeah. Well.
Very true.
Yeah. So. Now for hand washing. 76% were more likely to wash their hands with soap and water after touching raw meat than before preparing food or after cracking raw eggs, to which I said to myself, Well, I won't be eating at their house. You don't wash your hands before you make the food?
But I as we discussed, I'm willing to bet that the numbers are even higher now. The hand washing thing has really taken off since COVID. So
yeah, this was 2019. So this is pre-COVID. Well, that's going to be a marker for the rest of our lives, isn't it? Was that before or after COVID? Okay, but at least then the 76% after touching raw meat, because that makes me think, of course, of the study that they did a couple years ago of people and the washing of chicken and all of that that made everybody lose their minds. But it goes to show, again, some messaging is getting through. Okay, and last, but not least, Barbara.
And my favorite.
Thermometers. Yes, your favorite. Thermometers. A majority of people own food thermometers. Now, majority is, in this case, is just 62%. But usage varies depending on what's being cooked. And to this is where I want to emphasize self-reporting, because I want to see this. I want to see some of these things actually happen. 85% said they used it for whole chickens. 79% said they use it for beef, lamb, or pork roasts. 40%, because and here's where it starts, even if you believe that, 40% for chicken parts, 36% for burgers, 23% for egg dishes. I've never seen anyone whip out a thermometer for egg dishes. And my favorite, 20% for frozen food. Come on, that's just...
Look, consumers, you know, food safety professionals don't have, you know, numbers this good for whole chicken and for roast. Consumers aren't doing this.
And frozen meals.
But, you know, the interesting thing about frozen, as, you know, the mother of kids who ate chicken nuggets, not all chicken nuggets can be microwaved. Right, you really have to read the label. So I didn't like to buy the ones that I had to turn on the oven. I like the microwavable ones. But I bet there are a lot of people who try and microwave the ones that should go in the oven. So maybe the frozen is not a bad idea in that case. And nobody talked about using a thermometer in a bread. I have some baking cookbooks that, you know, talk about taking...
Well, that comes down to probably quality on that part, too. I mean, if it's not cooked all the way, you really don't want to, you know. Yeah. Anyway, we'll put links in the show notes, of course, for all of that. And one last newsy note here is for those of you who've been following our five-part series on global food safety culture, part three, focusing on Asia, will air live on April 27th. So mark your calendar, or better yet, register for free now by visiting our website, food-safety.com, then find webinars under our events tab.
So you say April 27th, but with the time difference, it's actually, at least for East Coast, the evening of the 26th. So...
That's right. So it's the 27th in Asia.
But the 26th, 10 p.m., come join me, Unite Owls.
Or 7 p.m., you can join me in Los Angeles when we tune in. Yeah, like we did for Australia.
So we'll make a party of it.
So good. The Australian one was so good. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, join us. If only we had that live chat like we do in some of the conferences.
Yeah.
You know, that's fun. Half the fun's in the margins in those live
conferences.
That's
right.
But we'll be getting to that. Actually, we're getting to some of that right now.
There you go.
So join us. Lone Jesperson and 3M sponsoring this wonderful series, Part 3, Asia. Once you do one, you'll want to do them all. So don't miss it. April 27th and 26th. Okay.
There you go.
Now, as many of you are aware, since our acquisition by BMP Media back in the fall, Food Safety Magazine is now the producer of the Food Safety Summit. And to help our audience get more familiar with this year's program, Barbara sat down with Gary Ades, the event chairperson, to get some highlights. So we'll just let you guys speak for yourselves. How's that?
That's perfect.
Okay. Cue that interview now.
Hi, Gary. It's great to have you back on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
So we know that the Food Safety Summit is right around the corner, about a month away. So I wanted to ask you if you could highlight for our listeners some of the upcoming content that will be at the summit this year.
Sure. I mean, in fact, there's a whole lot of it. So I'll go through some of it and maybe in some categories that might help people think about what they want to listen to. And then in some more broader terms. Since COVID has always been a situation and it's not going away for a while, we've done a whole area of COVID-19 and beyond. And it talks about how it's been managed over all the segments in the food service industry. Identification of unintended consequences that have happened, the public expectations of the food industry, and then how to integrate leadership and local public health officials. Additionally, we'd look at the regulatory and legal sessions, talking about mutual reliance, the new role that OSHA is playing, which is becoming very interesting, the visual auditing and how it's working, and what the future will look like in retail and new business from a regulatory and legal standpoint. Additionally, we also talked about some of the technologies. In the technologies of taking a look at HACCP again and taking a look at basically what's the number one thing that recalls right now, and it's physical. It's physical hazards in food. So that means talks to maintenance and sanitation issues, which we will be discussing. We'll talk about how climate affects the food supply chain because it's being disrupted radically. And then we'll even talk about the food safety challenges with plant-based foods. One of the things that we especially want to emphasize or take care of are our food safety professionals who need support and guidance in many areas, and also to hear what other people have done from case studies. So we're going to talk about how to take care of yourself, each other, your employees, and your communities. We'll talk about how you can stay fit mentally and the challenge that you have in trying to always be out there in front, and the mindfulness training. Those are just kind of general four areas: the COVID-19, regulatory tools and technology, and support for food safety leadership. We'll also talk about what's going on in three general sessions. The first would be the new role and responsibilities of the food safety professionals in the COVID-19 world. And that is going to be actually the keynote. And it's going to be Craig Wilson, who's VP and GMM of Costco. And he will give the real life situations of what Costco did and the new roles and responsibilities he has had as one of the coordinators of the COVID-19 response. Will be the 10th annual town hall, and I'll be moderating that. And we're fortunate to have Steve Matternack from AFTO, Rob Tokes from CDC, and Frank Yannis from FDA speaking. And additionally, we're also going to be including this year from the CDC is Sherry McGarry, who is the liaison to the FDA for food safety. And then in a closing session, we'll have a general session, Let's Work the Problem, People. And if you remember, that was what was said at one of the NASA situations. And it's a guide to flexible crisis planning and to discuss how to build and take an incident management plan beyond what's on the page of your program. And look for the flexibility that you can use, because I hate to say it, but this is not the first pandemic we're going to go through, and we have to be ready for the next one. The summit also offers three general workshops on what does traceability mean for me and my business, the roadmap to the food safety culture, and the state of the industry, the effect of COVID-19 on current and future management practices. So that's kind of a snapshot about a very, very comprehensive program.
It is very comprehensive. Now, the summit's only one of several food safety conferences. How do you think the summit differentiates itself from those other food safety meetings?
Hey, thanks for asking that question, because we get it a lot. You said, why should we come to your meeting rather than somebody else's? And we've been doing this, the summit's 23 years old, and we've been evolving for a number of years. And one of the things that we evolved with, and I think is the meaningful thing that separates us from other meetings, is that we provide solutions for today and planning for tomorrow. And our solutions are based on applicable science. While we think that technology is very important and we have other conferences that rely heavily on technology, I believe that we're probably the leading one that talks about solutions. We're looking at having something that the attendee can take home immediately and use. What are the solutions? I have a problem. What can I do about it? I know there's a problem. You've already given me all the science on the numbers. Got it. There's a problem. Now, what the heck do I do about it? And what have others done about it? And what have been the pitfalls and the problems in trying to get it done?
Great.
Hey, thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Gary. It was great to see you and talk to you again.
You too.
Thanks again to Gary for taking some time to talk with us. And we also want to share some very exciting news. Since that interview was recorded, we have confirmed two new speakers for the very popular town hall. So in addition to Steve Mondernach with AFTO, well known by our podcast audience here, Robert Talks from CDC, and Frank Yannis, many times referred to here on the pod as just Frank from FDA, we are very pleased to announce that two members of the new administration are making their first conference appearances at our town hall. And they are Sandra Eskin, Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety at USDA, and Sherry McGarry, the CDC liaison to FDA for Food Safety. I'm very excited. We're very excited. I feel we're making news. This is us making news right here, right now. We, of course, want to thank these ladies again for choosing the summit for their first appearances. So we hope to see you at that conference, May 11th through the 13th. You can visit foodsafetysummit.com for all the registration details, including a great corporate rate, so that you and your whole team can come and learn together with access to the full program. And in addition, we also have an option that includes the general sessions, which does include that aforementioned and very exciting town hall, and as well as the exhibit hall at no charge. So to learn more, again, visit foodsafetysummit.com to choose the best option for you and your team. And as always, we'll provide all links to all the references that we've mentioned in our show notes, and, or visit our podcast page at food-safety.com and find episode 93. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Just search for Food Safety Magazine. Now it's time for Barbara's discussion with Omar Yarzabal, an Extension Associate Professor and Food Safety Specialist at the University of Vermont. He's a lead instructor for HACCP, FSMA Preventive Controls for Human Food, and Sprout Safety Alliance Training. He's also a certified HACCP auditor and has taught food safety, bioinformatics, biostatistics, microbial risk assessment and management, and introductory HACCP classes for more than 15 years. Omar's research expertise is the identification, typing, and control of foodborne pathogens, with emphasis on Campylobacter. He received his PhD in microbiology and food safety from Auburn University and his DVM from the National University of Rio in Argentina.
It was a lot of fun to talk to Omar since we did these surveys together and wrote these articles together. And he's also working on another survey. So we're not done yet. But yes, actually, my favorite part of our conversation was when we talked about the training tools that he uses. Lots of good ideas there for everybody trying to do training remotely these days.
Yeah, there was some interesting stuff there. And we will be putting, of course, notes in the show notes, too, with references to some of those things as well. So, okay, after a short break, we'll hear that interview. Arm & Hammer Animal and Food Production is the only global food chain partner integrating diverse technologies for food safety across the food chain. The suite of products in the Arm & Hammer portfolio fit with a multi-hurdle, multi-technology approach to help the protein industry mitigate risks from Salmonella, Campylobacter, E. coli, and other foodborne pathogens. The company's offerings include broad-spectrum antimicrobials and innovative phage technology applied during meat and poultry processing. In addition, Arm & Hammer offers animal feed additives that reduce pathogen contamination before animals ever reach the processing plant. To learn how Arm & Hammer products can help you achieve your food safety goals, visit ahfoodchain.com. That's ahfoodchain.com.
Well, good morning, Omar. It's great to have you on the podcast today.
Good morning, Barbara. Thank you for having me.
I've really been looking forward to digging into the meaning of food safety with you. It's been a topic that's come up a lot at when we were able to meet in person at the food safety conferences, how people are really wrapping their heads around what food safety means. So let's get started. So I guess for our listeners, if you could set the context for why you decided to survey folks across the food industry about the meaning of food safety. Did you have a hunch from your work in extension that food safety really means different things to different people?
Yeah, probably this goes back to a career where I started back in Argentina, where I am from, where I studied, I became a what is called the equivalent of a doctor in veterinary medicine here in the States. And towards the end of those years, I realized that, microbiology, zoonotic diseases, public health were very interesting topics for me, but kind of not well understood in general by the public. So over the years, I came to the States and I went through graduate degrees and I understood the basic on how we characterize some biological agents, infectious agents. And we're talking primarily now here about foodborne agents like Salmonella, Campylobacter, Listeria. And I always realized that people tend to coalesce and put things together, but they are different. They behave in different ways. And so sometimes our way of comparing things from one microorganism to another didn't work well. And the moment I started working more and more with the industry, I realized that they needed more and more assistance in terms, in terminology. I have been in the field for probably 25 years. So I've seen quite a bit of changes in food safety. And therefore, there is an evolution in terms, in the way we understand some topics. And sometimes we need to kind of catch up a little bit. So that's the reason why I started asking all these type of questions, because they do have different definitions in people's minds.
In your initial survey, and we'll put all the links to these articles in the show notes for this episode, the survey that you came up with, you asked which answer was the best definition of food safety. And I'm going to read the answers, and I want you to first explain how you came up with the answers, because I'm curious about this. But the possible answers were free of harmful elements, clear and accurate labeling, clear information in terms of ingredients and sourcing, fewer ingredients, processing and not artificial, nutritional content, or none of the above. I mean, from my perspective, given those answers, I would have chosen free of harmful elements. But how did you come up with those different answers? Was it a combination of what you've heard people in the industry use to describe food safety or consumer perceptions of food safety? How'd you come up with
those? Right. So basically those responses, all of them except none of the above, was taken from a survey that was done a few years ago. I think the survey was published in 2015, and it was reported by Deloitte Consulting Group that work with the Food Marketing Institute and the what was at that time the Grocery Manufacturers Association, that would be Consumers Brands Association now, right? They came out with this interesting publication that is a free publication, you know, that you can download as a PDF. It's called Capitalizing on the Shifting Consumer Food Value Equation. They were saying that the equation of how consumers look for food is changing, and some of them are more interested, you know, in things that they were not the traditional, you know, way people would, you know, choose or select food. And that's why they came out with this idea of accurate labeling and details about the ingredients. I basically put all of those and I added none of the above. And to give a context a little bit to the audience, this is the publication that we have, and actually in Food Safety Magazine, in your magazine from March 2019. And what we did is just, I survey food manufacturing through my training, because I am a lead instructor in several different classes like HACCP, preventive controls, the Better Process Control School for, you know, acidified and low acid foods. So in those classes, which are mainly directed to food manufacturers, I was, you know, adding that little survey. And the reality is that it's very interesting to see that the number of people in percentage-wise that chose free of harmful element is very, very similar to the one reported in that national survey that I mentioned back from 2015. That survey, the national survey, included about, if I recall right, about 5,000 individuals here across the country. So it was very, very interesting. The only thing that was different is that more people, I mean, in our survey, several people chose the none of the above, actually more than 25%, okay? And all of the others that were like clear and accurate label and nutritional content were very, very low in numbers. That all of that can be seen in that figure number one of that publication, again, from March 2019. So none of the above, 25, a little bit more than 25%, is telling me that at least a quarter of the food processors are picking that up because they didn't find a good, clear definition in the others. And remember, we always talk about the concept of free or sterile in food, and those are concepts that don't have a full definition. We cannot find a sterile food, meaning that there is no microbes. We can talk about commercial sterility in some cases, and it's very hard to, you know, produce food that is free of harmful of all the elements. When we say harmful elements, we are saying it has zero. We know sometimes food may have some harmful element, yet they don't have a major impact in public health. It's a very tricky definition. So that's why I added that one. And I think I was surprised because I was expecting food manufacturers to react a little bit more than like the public. But because they work with food and they understand these, you know, caveats and the challenging that we have in processing, they were choosing something that to me makes a little bit more sense.
So you were surprised, though, that so many of them chose none of the above.
Correct. I was actually thinking that it would be very few and that everybody would go into just free or harmful element. And I think that it didn't happen. Now, there is also... we need to take these two comparison with a caveat too. The survey that they did in 2015, that was published in 2015, they allowed for the respondents to choose more than one. I didn't allow them to choose more than one. So you sum up our values are all 100%, and you're going to see that they, but you will see in their survey that some of them have 62%, 51%, 41%. You say, whoa, that's more than 100%. They did allow them to choose several. And I think that's a little bit, in my case, it would be a little bit confusing because I wanted them to choose what is the most appropriate in their minds.
So based on that initial survey that you did, do you think that's an adequate definition of food safety? Clearly, you went on to do more surveys to really try and get to the bottom of what should be a standard definition. So tell me about what you really thought of these results and how it prompted your additional surveys.
Right. So if we remove the free of harmful element, because it may not be the best definition, right? It may not be what is represented now. Although we are looking for that, we prefer, and some people almost demand that. So if a quarter of them say none of the above, the question is, so what is the actual definition? And I was never interested, and I am not still interested in coming up with one definition, because I think there's going to be a tremendous challenge in creating a definition that is, you know, in agreement for everybody, all the stakeholders in food, in the food industry. So with that in mind, we started moving into, you know, this idea of serving a little bit more, people, and I mean, mainly food manufacturers. And years before that, I was also doing a little bit of, you know, understanding how to create training material to deal with the concept of hazard and risk throughout my classes, because I think all food safety training are really touching the concept of hazard that is well defined even in our, you know, regulatory status or the regulation that we have in food safety. But the concept of risk is not very clearly defined. There is pretty open for interpretation in a way.
Right, right. I'd like to move folks along who are listening to the point where you and I started collaborating. I'll let you tell our listeners how that came about.
Well, actually, I'm going to need a little bit of your help, because I do remember having a very lovely lunch in one of the IAFP meetings. I don't remember, right. Was 2018 maybe? I don't remember right.
I don't remember either what year, but...
Right. And I remember we were thinking about getting together to talk about a potential, article for the magazine. And then what I really, really remember is that we started talking about this idea of food safety. And you said, yes, I really want to deal with this, because I am in a lot of meetings when people use terms and they have this perception that everybody understands them. And I remember you saying that, and I say, yes, this is something very interesting, because it's exactly what I was kind of, you know, going through. We make a lot of assumptions about how people will understand terms. And most of those assumptions are based on our own knowledge. You know, some people that has been around in an industry for many years, they of course they have a knowledge that others don't, and some are a little bit impatient because they expect everybody to follow their way of thinking. But again, not everybody has had that type of training or experience, right? So we were not too much interested in defining the terms, if I am correct, but we were more interested in how people will probably give an interpretation of those terms.
Omar, I'd like to move to when you and I started collaborating and putting together the second survey. But this time, instead of giving participants a list of answers to choose from, in terms of definition or meaning of food safety, we let them fill in the blank, provide what if they had to say, what does food safety mean to them? They were providing the answer. So when all was said and done and the data were in, what do you feel, looking at the responses, were the most significant findings?
Yeah. It was very interesting in general to see that whenever you ask people to define a term, whatever the term is, and if people have to think about it, you will really get quite a bit of a variety of words. Unless we are talking about a very, very clear definition within a context, within a subject, and you're talking about expert in that subject, they will say, oh yeah, this is, we all agree about that. This is not the case. This is something that we haven't seen it well defined. And therefore we get a myriad of different words that were included in that definition. So that was something very interesting. The fact that whenever you start using your own words to define something that doesn't have a clear definition yet, you start blurring the borders and you know the boundaries become very hard. And I think we found some of those answers. Some people were kind of struggling and you could tell, and they even were kind of vocally in telling us that they were struggling to come up with the words that satisfy themselves. Another, in a way, as a surprise to me, was the fact that the terms quality and safety are much more defined. And back 10 years ago, I would probably expect something different. The term quality and safety have always have a little bit of an overlap by many people, in the minds of many people in the industry. I still face a lot of people that, you know, are, you know, still, you know, seeing them as overlapping a lot. We have found a lot of people that we meet that are vice presidents or director of quality and safety, right? Because safety was kind of included into quality originally 30, 40 years ago. But now we're kind of separating them, and that's good because, you know, safety is something different from quality. We may have practices that address both, but the actual, you know, output, the overall goal is different.
Now, even with, like you said, all the different answers that we got for this, were there some commonalities that you could draw from?
Yeah, we collected a lot of words, and then we realized that the concept of practices, the concept of how you deal with the food while it's in, under your, you know, hands or your responsibility, if you will, that's where safety comes to play a role. And I think we kind of provided a general definition a little bit about, you know, what may be a more clear definition, with the caveat that many of them through our interviews, they were kind of adamant. Some of them would say, yeah, we probably don't want a very strict definition. We don't want to deal too much with a clear definition. We want to leave it a little bit open because especially some of the people that we interviewed that have been around for many years also, they understand the limitation of having a definition that may not, you know, cover all the areas of food, as you mentioned, you know, all the way from the farm to the restaurant. And I think they realize that this is also an evolving area, and therefore we want to leave it a little bit more open for different stakeholders to probably define or redefine or tweak a definition based on what is important for them.
It just is a point of clarification. So there are two articles that came out of the second survey. Right. The first looked at the survey responses as provided, and then you followed up by phone with some of the individuals who said, sure, I'd be willing to talk about this in more detail. So you conducted a series of interviews really to dig deeper into the responses from that survey. So you've talked about this a little bit, but I was surprised that looking over those responses again, that there were a significant number of people who thought we do need like a one-size-fits-all definition of food safety. There were a significant number of people who felt that way, even though at the end of the day, based on, you know, not only the fact that the food supply is global, but also, as we've talked about, the different types of foods, it would be difficult to arrive at that. I guess I'd like to hear what your feelings are if you think, first, that it's achievable, and that even if we don't, what can we still take away from even a multi-pronged definition of food safety?
Yeah, I'm glad that you clarify that, because sometimes in my mind, the survey and the interviews are all together, but they're in a couple of different publications. So maybe anecdote, by reviewing this survey, and remember there are only a handful of people that we interview, probably the people that have been around for more years, that are more senior, they tend to be more conservative, and they probably don't think too much about just one size fits all. They try to be a little bit more broader. I don't know if we can make a correlation with people that have less experience in the industry or something like that. I do believe that having a one-size-fits-all definition may not be easy to achieve. That one part of the equation. It would be very hard, actually. Because, again, we see food in different contexts and in different ideas. I mean, we are not talking about just the public may have a very clear definition. I want something that is safe for me when I consume it. Okay, that is a clear one. But, you know, what we are willing to do throughout the food chain is a little bit more complex. So I have the feeling that it may not be an easy definition to achieve. You know, I also think that since we are evolving with how we even manufacture food and the type of food combination that we're having that 20, 30 years ago we didn't even imagine about, we may have, if we create a definition, it may be a little bit restrictive, not resilient enough. So I am always struggling with definitions, and sometimes I don't want to create something that becomes like a burden or a barrier for improvement or update, if that makes sense.
It does. I think your observation that more senior people tend, I think, to steer away from a one-size-fits-all definition. I think over time, one appreciates to a greater extent the complexity that's involved in keeping food safe, because it's not just the science. I mean, of course, that's a huge part, but almost as important is the engagement by the people who are involved. I've heard a lot of food safety professionals say that they like to empower the employees on the line who do this day in and day out to be able to stop the line when they see something that's not quite right. They may not understand scientifically what's going on or appreciate the risk involved, but they do know what's normal and not normal. And when something seems a little bit off kilter, they need to be empowered to be able to take action. So that's a very strong component I think of keeping food safe that wouldn't be in anyone's definition of food safety, empowering employees to make decisions, or explaining to a frontline worker, connecting the dots between safe food and would you feed this to your family? Those types of, I don't even want to say soft skills, but those types of connections in a food plant are incredibly important for what you call the outcome, the public health outcome, that food, you know, being safe. So I think what, to your point, when you've been in the industry a while and you understand the interplay of all these different parts, that might in part explain why there's not a strong feeling about having a single definition of food safety.
Right. And you're mentioning something that this, where the rubber meets the road, really, is really the employees, the practices that we do. And unfortunately, in many different ways, we sometimes deal with people that most of us consider that have, you know, lower level of education, but it doesn't mean that they are not risk intelligent. I've seen people online with very little that are very good for decision making, for the process of decision making. And that's very important. And sometimes we don't realize what we have employee wise. I see that quite a bit, unfortunately. So as you mentioned, just getting them involved, explaining things can make a tremendous impact on how good those you know, employees become and how much they help you with all this concept of food safety.
So hearing you talk about this, you reminded me of something that I think would be really interesting to do, and I haven't quite figured out the best approach. Clearly at food safety meetings, you're talking to people in management positions, or the readers of the magazine, for example, or the folks we have on the podcast, such as yourself. But I would like to dig deeper into what the sanitation line worker thinks about food safety. What does the person, we've seen a lot of pictures during the pandemic of the inside of a meat plant, for example, and the people standing shoulder to shoulder now with the plexiglass dividers working on the processing line. I would love to get to those people and say, what does food safety mean to you? Because that really lets you know whether at a corporate level or a plant level, have you translated what is most important about the concept of food safety down to the people who are actually tasked with making sure that happens? You know, it's the manager or the supervisor who can come up with the plan, who can come up with the steps that someone needs to follow. But if that's not really understood by the person doing the job, then you haven't gotten where you need to be. So I would love, and I don't know, you know, not to put you on the spot, something that you might be interested in working on, yeah, on too, is really getting down to where, as you say, where the rubber meets the road. So,
and it's going to be a little bit of a challenge, you know that, sure, because each company takes things in different ways. We are talking about an industry where, you know, the line employees are not paid too much. It's just based on an hourly, they're clocking, they're either. So every time matters. Also how management in those companies take this. For some of them still, you know, food safety is a burden. It's extra time training that they don't have time to do, or they don't have the work without the funds, the, you know, to do it. So they see it as an extra cost. That's a reality. Right. The reality is also like when we talk about sanitation, and this is happens a lot because we deal a lot with that. I mean, cleaning and sanitation is a very, very important tool for many things, right? And when you start saying, okay, how much do you, you know, compile, how much information you collect about this, you know, cleaning and sanitation practice. And some they say, we just have a check mark. So from the check mark to really evaluating and verifying the efficacy is a long, long way. And you're not going to get there all of a sudden, when we also know that verification can be a challenge, even professional. How do you verify? What are the objects? The objectives of that verification? Are you going to start measuring first organic matter? Are you going to eventually go into microbial testing? Microbial testing is expensive. So, you know, it becomes a series of decision-making process that it's not only overwhelming for smaller and mid-sized company, but also a little bit out of their financial sphere, sure. I would say, sure. Financial reach. But you're right. This is where we eventually should go. Yeah.
I'm going to put it on the list of things to do.
We should start. We will find companies willing to help a little bit in here. It's always the numbers, right. You know, how much is enough. But, you know, I always say that when you start having in a small number, you already have a trend. That's enough to give you some ideas.
Sure. So, Omar, as we start to wrap up today, if you had to come up with like the major take-home message of the surveys that we've published, what would you think that would be?
So the take home is that we are still evolving. We don't have a very clear, specific definition of food safety. We may not see it over in the short term, but that's okay. I think with a lot of uncertainties, we keep moving, we keep making progress. And that's important. Again, we make a lot of, you know, decisions in life with a lot of uncertainty. Sure. Also, we are starting to realize that maybe trying to fight for a definition may not be the best effort because we may probably put some burdens, as we said, or barriers. Maybe we have to let the industry evolve. At a personal level, I also found a very important message for me because I work with food manufacturers, and now I understand more how to calibrate myself with their perception of reality and their interpretation of terms and definition. And it's a struggle. I'm telling you, it's not something easy to achieve, but I push myself to calibrate more into how they interpret terms and work with them. Like, for instance, I go and I talk to them and I say, yeah, we just did a risk analysis or a risk assessment. And I ask a couple of questions and I know that probably they meant hazard analysis, right? And I'm okay. I'm not going to start going into the definition of one or the other. I understand what they mean. We are here to help with food safety. Let's move on. I have had actually people that we have discussed for years that, you know, we are acquaintances and discuss this idea for, the differences between a hazard analysis and a risk assessment. And they say, look, Omar, you know what I mean. And they keep using risk assessment. And I am fine. The idea is to maybe calibrate ourselves to understand what their needs are.
That's great. We will put a link to all the different resources that you've mentioned in the show notes for today's episode.
Thank you.
Oh, Omar, it's been great to have you on the podcast. And I'm looking forward to working with you on some more articles coming up.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Omar and Gary for joining us on the podcast today. And thanks to all of you for listening. A very special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Arm & Hammer Animal and Food Production, for sponsoring this episode of Food Safety Matters. Visit ahfoodchain.com to learn more about the diverse and comprehensive food safety solutions available from Arm & Hammer. You'll find links to all the references we mentioned in the episode in our show notes. You can access those in your podcast player or on our website at food-safety.com. Hit that podcast tab in the top navigation and then find episode 93. And please don't hesitate. Send us any questions or suggestions to podcast@foodsafetymagazine.com or post a note on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook. You want to make sure that new and bonus episodes magically appear in your feed by clicking that subscribe button. And of course, you know, a review never hurts. So take a minute, throw some stars our way. It's good for everyone. All right. That's it for us today. Our next regular episode will post on April 27th. Take good care of yourselves and those around you, and we'll talk to you then. I think I'm going to take a nap now.